Hey, tennis fans, you are listening to Matchpoint Canada, the official podcast of Tennis Canada. We're also members of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm Ben Lewis, joined alongside Mike McIntyre as the clay court season continues. Félix Auger-Aliassime reaching a Masters 1000 final in Madrid. I mean, Mike, that would normally be, I think, the big news of the podcast, but I would say we have bigger news in terms of our guest for this one.
Yeah, we're pretty lucky and fortunate this week to have not only big Canadian news on the court, but off the court as well, as Bianca Andreescu joins us this week on Matchpoint Canada. And the timing couldn't be more perfect as she's about to return to the WTA Tour after another long injury hiatus going back to last August, where she last played at the National Bank Open in Montreal. So this is big news. Bianca fans are definitely going to want to tune in and listen to this interview with her about what she's been doing during this hiatus, why she's ready to come back now, and what her goals are for the rest of the season. So some really great stuff from, you know, a guest aside from her on-court accomplishments, just someone who, you know, we've got a good rapport with over the years at Matchpoint Canada, having known her since she was in juniors. And you can't help but root for someone who's been through as much as she has in recent years.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And so happy she took the time to kind of update us. And as you said, update her fans. Let's listen into our conversation with 2019 U.S. Open champion Bianca Andreescu.
This week on Matchpoint Canada, we welcome back one of our original guests on the podcast going back many years now, although she's only 23 years old, but already one of the most decorated Canadian tennis players of all time, with wins at the National Bank Open, Indian Wells, and of course the US Open as well. Bianca Andreescu, it's great to have you back with us this week, and it's great to have you back in general too.
Thank you. I'm happy to be speaking to you both again.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to see you. And obviously, it's been some time since we've seen you on the circuit competing. Maybe just give us an update health-wise with how you're at and where your training is and maybe when you're hoping to return as well.
Yeah, sadly, that's kind of been my career thus far. I'm really hoping to change that. I've really been paying attention to my health in all aspects. So, I mean, as of now, I'm feeling really good and I'll be ready to play Rabat, which is in about two weeks, I think. So, yeah, that's very exciting for me. I've just been training basically the past 3 months. Definitely longest preseason I've had. I feel like every time I've been injured, I keep saying I've had a long preseason. It's my longest preseason, but this one has topped them all. I mean, 3 months is crazy, but it's been really good.
We're really happy to see you back. And, you know, as I introduced you and said that you were 23 years old, I almost had to pause and do a double take because, my goodness, does it ever seem like you've been around a lot longer as a professional tennis player? And between all that you've already accomplished and, unfortunately, all the injuries that you've had to overcome, do you ever feel like you've lived several careers already by this point?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't feel like my body is a 23-year-old's body. With all the injuries, obviously, that was very bad luck. But yeah, I like to say that the universe likes to test us in many ways. My main test of my life, I guess, is dealing with physical injuries and obviously my mental health too, but those all tie along together. But I don't regret any of them. I mean, I've learned so much more about myself through, I guess, the challenges that I've been faced, more than, you know, the victories or the happy times. So I feel like I'm in a really good place.
I would say 99% of the players out there would take your career and what you've accomplished already, you know, and be more than satisfied with that. What have you missed the most during this recent time away from the sport? And on the flip side of that, is there a silver lining that maybe you've been able to explore many more avenues outside of tennis than some of your peers who haven't had to miss so much time?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I've discovered a lot about myself. Maybe if I didn't have this time off, I wouldn't have, you know, found passion for, you know, spirituality or martial arts or even painting. I started to paint on my break. So I've done a few different things. And I think it all ties back to not having full identity of myself through the sport. I want to be able to, you know, have many other avenues because then I'm just going to go crazy. I mean, that's how it was when I had my mental break in 2021. And I did not like how I felt. So now I feel like having all these tools also will help me in life, but will also help me on the court too, because again, I won't have, so much tied into the wins, to the losses. I feel like I'm going to enjoy myself more on the court. I mean, that's how it's felt last year, for instance. And I feel like it's just going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, speaking of the work on the court, coaching wise, I wanted to check if you're still working with Christophe Lambert, and if so, how is that partnership going? And maybe what sort of aspects have you been working on through the preseason with him, if he is still the guy?
Yeah, I've actually took a full 360 with my team. My coach now is my hitting partner that I've had for the past 3 months, or 3 months, 3 years, sorry.
Okay.
James Nishimura, JT, we call him JT. And he's been great. We've both taken, because this is both, it's very new to both of us, is what I meant. He's taking a leadership role, and I am as well, because now I feel like I'm really, really paying attention to what I want to do, and he's very receptive to that. And we're both learning from each other, and it's been great. I mean, he's the one that I'm hitting with. He's the one that can give me the best feedback. And he's learned a lot over the last 3 years, not only from the coaches that I've worked with, but also from me too. Like, he knows me inside and out. And he's still pretty young. He actually just turned 28 last week. And I like that. I like that young vibe in the team. And I'm also working with Clem Mongolier as a fitness trainer. He used to train me back in 20. Well, actually, I've known him since I was 14. But we work together very well in 2018, 2019, and 2020 very consistently. And now we're back together. So it's me and him and JT for now.
Awesome. Thanks for that update. You mentioned your hitting partner kind of learning things over the years. I feel like you've learned a lot over the years in terms of management on the tour, and this was another extended layoff due to injury. I wonder, does it get a bit more manageable for you having sort of gone through an extended break before? Do you feel like you can, sort of mentally and physically handle it a little bit better and be more prepared maybe?
I hate to say this, but I'm used to it. I'm kind of used to it. Like,
Okay,
it's like
yeah.
another injury type thing, which sucks. And I don't want it to be like that ever again. I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. I haven't had a full, I guess, healthy year on tour. And yeah, my focus now has been really to lock in physically. So I do my best to prevent as much as I can. And that's been basically the focus, and obviously my game too, and in different aspects. But what's great about, I guess, feeling used to this is that I know how to process it, and I know how to go about it. And I always find like different tips and tricks along the way, like if I re-injure myself again or whatnot. But yeah, hopefully it won't happen again. At
Fingers
least like
crossed.
a long break. I don't want to have another long break. Like, I want to use these young years to really lock into my career and yeah, see what I can do, basically.
Well, your fans are definitely looking forward to that as well. And many of them were buzzing when we said you'd be on our podcast again. So they're excited to hear from you and then see you play in a couple of weeks' time. While you were off, the Canadian squad surprised a lot of people. And had a fantastic run to the Billie Jean King Cup title. I'm wondering what that was like for you to be watching and cheering from, the sidelines, but how much would joining that team in November for another run at the title mean to you right now?
Yep, that's everything for me. I mean, Fed Cup has always been something I always enjoy playing. It's something different than any other tournament, obviously. And I get to be surrounded by such an amazing group of people. And yeah, watching them win was freaking incredible. I know that a lot of times I was injured, I couldn't play, but I was there. Like in Vancouver, I was there back last year, I think it was. And then in Switzerland back in like 2020, I was able to come. So in a way, I was kind of pissed that I wasn't there. I didn't care to play, obviously, I couldn't. But if I was just there to support and actually be there and kind of experience it with everyone, would have been amazing. But nonetheless, yeah, they did amazing. They created history, and hopefully they can do it again, and hopefully with me by their side too.
Absolutely. And there's another big international event obviously happening this summer with the Olympic Games in Paris. I got to be honest, I'm not 100% clear on the qualification process. It's quite complicated, especially for someone coming back from injury. But I've heard that it's a goal of yours. So maybe you could explain to our listeners and to us how you're feeling about this opportunity and how would you be able to make that happen given being away from the sport for a while now?
Yeah, so basically, I have the opportunity to use my protective ranking, is what it's called. So if you're gone from the sport due to injury or whatever, pregnancy, this applies to people that get pregnant as well, women that get pregnant. So I've been off for, I guess, 8 months now, so I'm able to use that. And my protective ranking would be, I think, in the 60s, low 60s. So, I'm hoping that I'll be able to play. I think playing the tournaments before that could potentially help me get into the main draw, and like maybe some people might not come. It's a cutoff of 54, I think. It's basically through ranking. And so I think I have a really good chance of making it. And yeah, it's been my goal ever since I was a little girl. And if I can, be up on that stage, whether I win or lose, obviously I want to win, but just raising up that Canadian flag and representing my country will mean the world to me.
Bianca, you mentioned mental health earlier in the chat, and this will actually be your third year being involved as an ambassador for Tennis Canada's Mental Timeout initiative, supported by Beneva. Maybe you could tell us about your closeness to that project, why maybe it means so much to you.
Definitely. Mental health for sure has a very important spot in my life. I think mental health is everything. I think that's where everything stems from. If you're not good up here, you won't be good, physically or emotionally. And so if me and Tennis Canada sponsored, with Beneva, they can all come together to form different like techniques or different programs for kids and people to support mental health. I think we can do amazing things. I mean, we have already. There's always more that we can do, but I definitely believe that if we can tackle mental health, we can tackle a lot.
And it's also Mental Health Awareness Month, sure enough, which is good timing too. Since you are someone, you touched on your spirituality. If you had one maybe tip that you've learned through your mental health practices that you could share with our listeners, what would that be?
I could say a lot. Oh my gosh. The one thing that I've really found very helpful is controlling my thoughts as much as I can and not identifying too much with them. Because they say what you think about, you bring about, basically. So where you put your attention is where your energy goes. And so if you're thinking negatively, negative things will mainly come to you, and vice versa with the positivity. So I know it's a cliche, stay positive, but I think it's a really, really important tool. I know it's not always easy to do that, but if you can even just find like the slightest thing to feel grateful for, whether it's having a roof over your head or having somebody that you can talk to or just being able to have a meal, I think can really, really make a di difference. I mean, physiologically, it's been proven that when you're in that grateful state, nothing negative can kind of come about. So if you're able to even hold that for like 5 minutes a day, it can really make a huge difference.
In terms of staying positive, I would imagine as you're coming back to the tour, you've got to have nothing but good thoughts, returning with your peers. The WTA has just gotten stronger, it seems like, every year. And right now, not only is there incredible depth, but you've got four players at the top who really seem like they want to hold on to those major titles, those big events. How do you feel about yourself fitting back into that? Obviously, you've got to shake off some rust and find your groove. But once you do, where do you see you sort of landing within that talent group on the WTA right now?
Yeah, I feel like my game is there. I feel like if I can consistently do well in my matches, then I know I'll get back up there. Basically, I just have to have that consistency of playing tournaments and playing matches. Whether I lose, doesn't matter. I just want to be able to play these tournaments and have the opportunity to, learn from what I need to learn from, basically. Mentally, I just have to I guess gain my confidence back. I think that's the main thing for me. And again, that comes from playing consistent matches, feeling good about myself, not getting too down on myself too will help. But I've been able to watch a lot of them play. So I guess it's good to also learn from the best too. I mean, they're all so tough physically, mentally, emotionally. They have like that competitiveness in them. And I feel like I lost that a little bit over the years. So if I can get that back, then yeah, I'm definitely hoping top one. Let's go for number one, baby. Come on.
Like
I
it.
love it. Yeah. Is clay like a comfortable place for you to kind of reset and begin your season? And is that the surface you've mainly been training on right now?
Yeah, this has been the one I've basically been training on. There have been a few times where I was training on hard because I wasn't sure if I was going to be playing on the hard court tour this year. I was kind of hoping, but I was getting a bit too ahead of myself. But yeah, clay has been great. It's also really easy or easier on the body, let's say, rather than hard. And it's been great. I feel like I've had a lot of success in the past with playing on the clay. And I really want to get back to that because I feel like my game style can really, really do damage on it. With my variety, which I want to start implementing a bit more of. I think that's another thing I kind of got away from. But yeah, I think I can do well. I just got to stay locked in, that's all.
We have a couple of fan questions to lock in with to finish the interview with you. Ben, you want to take the first one here?
Shirley on X asks, what are some of your tennis goals for the rest of the season?
Number one is to do my best to stay healthy. So that is, eating right, sleeping well, and surrounding myself with good people so I can feel emotionally okay, because that plays a big role. And then entering the top 20. I'm gonna start with that. And just feeling really good out there, feeling happy to be back competing and putting up fights every match.
Our last question comes from Lise, and this is a hard-hitting question, so get ready for it. She wants to know, how's Coco?
Oh my gosh, I knew that was gonna come. Everybody has to ask about Coco. She's great. She's great. She's healthy. She's happy. Attached to my mom. When she's with my mom, you do not want to go near her. She is so protective. But yeah, she's still her sassy self. I want to start posting more of her because we have some really funny videos. She has so much personality, which I think is another thing that people like. But she's good.
Right on.
That's great. Well, it seems like you're doing great as well, and we have to say we can't wait to watch you back competing in a couple weeks' time, because it's always so great to watch you play. Bianca, thanks so much for returning to the podcast, giving us an update, and we wish you the best for the rest of the season.
It's my pleasure, and we'll catch up then. Hopefully good things.
There you have it, our interview with Bianca Andreescu, who I have to say, I mean, she generally seems in very good spirits when she's chatting with us. And like you said, she's like a really down-to-earth person. And that's something I appreciate about Bianca. Like she knows us by name. She always says hello. It's not like she's waiting for the clock to run out to get the interview done. She's genuinely happy to speak with us and give us that update. And I felt like she seemed in very positive spirits, given that she's yet to play this year and is again, dealing with more injuries.
I mean, after 9 months off, you'd have to think you're just chomping at the bit to get back out there on court and do what you're meant to do as a professional tennis player, not sit around and rehab and train and practice, but to be out there competing against the best in the world. And Ben, I got to tell you, of all our Canadian tennis players, I feel like male or female, in terms of at full health, what any of them are capable of doing, I put Bianca Andreescu at number one in terms of what she can do when she's healthy. And tell me how you feel, but I think she's still our biggest threat to win a major if she's physically and mentally in peak form.
Well, I feel like after seeing Felix Auger-Aliassime make final in Madrid, which we'll talk about, now I'm unsure on that one, and that's a really good question, actually. But you're right, full health, Bianca. I think the ceiling is so incredibly high, and you look back at that 2019 season and what she managed to accomplish, it was much more than just the US Open, which was obviously incredible, but it wasn't kind of a flash in the pan. We saw it earlier in that season at Indian Wells. We saw it at the National Bank Open with that historic title in Toronto. And then I feel like, between all the injuries over the past few years, we've seen glimpses making a final in Miami, seeing her back on court, push on Jabeur into deep into a third set center court at Wimbledon, and you felt like this is the Bianca we know and love, the way she kind of can compete, use the forehand, mix in the variety. So I think, you know what, I think she has the highest ceiling of any Canadian tennis player we have right now, and now it's about fulfilling that. And she mentioned, and it's easy to forget, she hasn't had a single full season on the tour, not one. And you think she played a lot of tennis in 2019. Even then, she was dealing with injuries and kind of managing and fighting through it. So it's something she's very used to. Now we're sort of rooting for half a season here in 2024 to get back on track.
And she's missed such long stretches of time too. I mean, from October 2021 to April 2022, that was the mental health reset that she took and she needed. And my goodness, as she mentioned in the interview answering your question about the Tennis Canada Mental Health Initiative, she's such a leader when it comes to that. And she's not the only one. I think of Naomi Osaka. I think of Amanda Anisimova. I mean, in particular on the women's game, there's quite a few who are open about the challenges that they faced in that regard, which I think has done wonders for other young athletes to say, hey, it's okay sometimes to take a break from it and to take a step back and realize I'm not just a tennis player, I'm much more than that. And so kudos to Bianca for continuing to be such a role model in that regard. But she's missed such big chunks. And yet when she comes back, she's still shown us, as you mentioned, that run to the finals in Miami, what she's capable of doing. And she's got the game to really trouble anyone on the WTA. And as she mentioned in the interview with us, she's looking forward to getting back to that sort of diverse game, mixing in more things. And, in that regard, she's a special and a unique player, I think. So I'm really stoked to see what she can do. I got to be honest, I'm sure our listeners feel the same. I'm like super nervous for her coming back to competition as well, because unfortunately, she's shown that there's, it's not just one part of the body, but there have been many things that have failed her, unfortunately, over the years. And my goodness, it'd just be great to see her get back to a stretch where she can show what she can do, sort of, week in, week out on the tour.
Yeah, I think clay is a good place to begin. And I think she made note of that too. It's like, softer surface, easier on the joints. I know she's been dealing, I think, kind of through her career, even dated back to juniors, she's dealt with these back issues and they can flare up. But I feel like clay is a nice soft surface to get things going. And ideally, she starts off with this smaller event and you get a few matches under your belt. Maybe things are clicking right away. She has, of course, that protected ranking she can use, as she mentioned, which kind of that protected ranking sitting around the 60s. She can get into Roland Garros, no problem, main draw, and maybe she can make some noise. I have to say, like, even with very few matches under her belt, I don't think any seeded player or anyone for that matter wants to draw Bianca Andreescu in their first round of a slam. She's such a dangerous opponent at her best, and we've seen flashes and glimpses when she's been back sparingly over the past couple of years. Now it's about seeing a run in a block of tournaments where her body holds up.
I wanted to ask you what you made of sort of the news that she broke with us, I guess, and the fact that she's got a new coach right now, that her hitting partner, James Nishimura, is now going to be more than just that, but also helping coach her as they navigate the tour together. What do you think of that instead of going for a more sort of veteran or established coaching name, that she's turning to someone who is not a whole lot older than she is, never been a head coach before for a big player on the WTA tour? What do you make of that decision for her?
I like it honestly because I feel like she's the type of personality that she needs to feel a closeness to her coach, that it's someone like she's almost bringing into the family, like an extended family member, someone she knows personally very well, someone who really knows her. And I think someone who speaks as openly about mental health as she does, has struggled in the past, she needs kind of that positive environment. And it didn't really work with Sven Groenfeld when she tried that a few years ago. So I think just given her track record, she's going to feel the most comfortable with someone who she's really letting into her sphere and has that kind of close personal relationship with. And I feel like she had that way back when with Sylvain Bruneau. And the reasons they parted were maybe different of the fact that Bruneau wants to work. mostly with juniors in Tennis Canada, and they were sort of at different points of their career. But I mean, let's see how it works out, but she seems very comfortable in it.
I wonder if some coaches also were a little bit deterred by the fact that they don't know how, how long she's going to be healthy for, which I
True.
think maybe is a fair point.
Yeah.
And hopefully she's able to come back and show that. And hey, look, I hope things work out between the two of them, that her and JT really click in terms of that coach and pupil rapport. But I'm excited to see what she can do both here on clay. I mean, last year she beat Vika Azarenka in round one at Roland Garros. I mean, she's shown she's able to beat some pretty big players. Then the grass court season, where she's got a limited repertoire really on grass still. And obviously we're all hoping we could see her in Toronto later in the summertime at the National Bank Open back at home, where she had that fantastic run. It's hard to believe that's going to be the 5-year anniversary of that and her US Open title already.
Yeah, that's crazy. And you know what? She played Montreal last year. She wasn't healthy when she played Montreal last year. And I'm very convinced, kind of post Wimbledon last season, she was trying to tough it out and play through injury, and it simply wasn't working. But she always seems to produce something magical in Toronto. Even when we saw her 2 years ago, had a few kind of thrilling three set wins and lost to Zhang Xunwen, who of course has become this phenomenal player and Australian Open finalist. So high hopes for Bianca Andreescu. We thank her for joining the podcast. And it, as we said off the top, happens in a big tennis week, or kind of 2 weeks, really, for Canadian tennis. Félix Auger-Aliassime reaching his first career Masters 1000 final. And boy, he was close to winning this as well. Takes on the Russian Andrei Rublev. Félix won the first set. Rublev rallies back and gets the win 4-6, 7-5, 7-5 for his second career Masters 1000 victory. A very unusual tournament for Felix in terms of injuries and withdrawals, and we'll talk about this, but what a big step forward on the clay here, and now back to the top 20 with this result.
Hey, you can only play who's in front of you. And if your opponents aren't ready to play or are not able to play, that's not your fault. So, Felix is going to take advantage of that. But when he had to, he was really sharp. And to me, that win over Casper Ruud was a real sign that something was clicking with Felix that hasn't been clicking in some time. You beat a guy who had just made the finals of Monte Carlo, won in Barcelona. I mean, Casper Ruud's been one of the hottest, five, not three players on clay on the men's side, really, since the clay court swing has started. So for Felix to get that win, what a big confidence boost. And then even pushing Rublev as he did in the finals, I think we'd all concede that Rublev was the favorite heading in, both due to his ranking and having a little bit more success at this level of tournament before. I know people who were watching were probably disappointed it had to end with a double fault. I know I was. I was really hoping it was going to go to that final tie break to decide it. But either way, I think this is a big step forward for Felix. And yeah, he got a little bit of luck on his side, but you could say over the last year and a half, he really hasn't had a ton of luck. So, the tennis gods, it was about time that they smiled on Felix for us.
Yeah, and you're right. That win over Ruud, to me, that's the signature victory of the tournament, of course, for him. That's actually his biggest win via ranking on clay in the history of his career. Casper Ruud ranked sixth at the time. Andrei Rublev jumping to world number six with this win. It's funny how things can turn on a dime in tennis. Rublev was going through an atrocious stretch before this tournament came along. Four straight early exits at events. He had that blow up in Dubai where he got fined for yelling at the linesperson. Just seemed like he was in a really bad mental state. And here in Madrid, it all just comes together. Gets a big win over Carlos Alcaraz, which is obviously, I think, the signature victory of the tournament outside of the final. And to me, now we kind of look at how the clay season has progressed. We'll talk about Rafa as well, but I think this is the most open things have ever been with Roland Garros coming up on the men's side, given,
That's a good point.
Alcaraz dealing with an arm injury, Jannik Sinner getting hurt in the hip, and that, of course, giving Felix that walkover, even Daniil Medvedev retiring after losing a set in the quarterfinals to surprise semifinalist Jiří Lehečka. There are a lot of question marks on a lot of players. We've only seen Novak play one tournament, so I don't know what to make of this clay season so far on the men's side.
Yeah, me neither, but I'm excited about it because let's be honest, Roland Garros has been the most predictable of the slams over the past 20 years,
Has.
given the fact that, Rafa's won 75% of them, and then the others have been divvied up between, well, mostly Djokovic after that, I guess, truly. with Roger sneaking in one as well in there, but
Stan as well, one. Yeah.
and Stan too. So I'm ready for a wide open Roland Garros. Like, let's give me the chaos at this event. I'd love to see it. And the players must go in with such a different feeling. I mean, come on, when you go into Roland Garros with a healthy Nadal in the draw, how depressing must that be over the years to know that, man, the guy's basically a lock to do it again, and so yeah, this is exciting. And just one more word on Felix, but as you mentioned, his ranking is going to shoot up from what, the mid 30s to 20th in the ATP now. And this is going to do some wonders for him too, in terms of giving him a more favorable draw, not just at Roland Garros, but over the next stretch of the season too. So I look, we'd love to see him get back to the top 10. We know he's got top 10 talent, and he resided there for several months as well, in recent history. It's I think we can all agree more on the mental side with Felix, that he needs to sort of find that groove and that belief in himself and trust in his shots, and hopefully this gives him that exact thing moving forward.
Yeah, and I have to say, I love the way he came out of the gates in that final. He took 8 of the first 9 points, I believe, dictating play with that inside out forehand. I thought he served great the entire tournament, and this looked like a massive step forward and more familiar with the form I think that we saw in 2022. Obviously played so well in the indoor season, but I sometimes think back to that round of 16 match with Rafa at Roland Garros. And, if you haven't seen that one, watch the highlights back. That to me is the player Auger-Aliassime can be, and maybe even much more. We should talk about Rafael Nadal because it was the official goodbye in Madrid to the Spanish crowd. And I thought he took a big step forward, considering where he had been the previous event, winning 3 matches. Gets the win over Alex de Minaur, avenging that loss in Barcelona, which was terrific. Plays a 3-set, 3-hour battle against Pedro Cachin, and his body holds up. These were all positive steps in the right direction for Rafa, and he has one more tournament in Rome before Roland Garros. It's like he's slowly building these blocks here to make one final run.
And can I just ask you here before we discuss his, on-court performance, but is there anything wrong with asking Rafa Nadal for a shirt or a towel or some memento after he beats you? I mean, my goodness, I can't believe there were some people on social media who were kind of bemoaning the fact that a professional tennis player would say that at the conclusion of a match. Are you kidding me? This is one of the all-time greatest players in the sport ever. And if you have an opportunity to do that, why wouldn't you take advantage? I mean, I think back to Wayne Gretzky's last season in the NHL, and guys were going up to him asking for sticks and things like that
Oh,
afterwards.
yeah.
Does that mean that their competitive instinct was dulled or somehow not at 100% when they were playing, that their mind was elsewhere? I mean, look, any player's mind is going to be elsewhere when you play a player like that. Give me a break. So
Yeah,
I think that that
0% wrong.
was right. And Rafa was obviously so obliging too. And what else would you expect from him?
Yeah, look, I would say maybe there's a little something wrong if Pedro Cachin loses this match 1 and 2 in 45 minutes and is saying, "Hey, can I have your shirt?" But he pushed him to a third set. They had a 3-hour battle. I think for me, he left everything on the court. And as you're going up for that handshake, there's a moment there where I think you're telling yourself, I just played one of my idols in his final season in front of this incredible Spanish crowd. This is kind of the moment of a lifetime for me. And he made my dream come true. Let's get a souvenir. I see nothing wrong with that. I thought it was a beautiful tennis moment, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I gotta say, this is starting to hit me a little harder than I thought, this farewell tour, now that he was able to get a couple of rounds into the tournament and just seeing the reaction of fans and whatnot. And oh man, it's going to yeah, there're going to be some tears, and I got to be perfectly honest, before I got into the media, not that I wasn't a Nadal fan, but I wasn't like a super fan. But it's hitting me right now that this is it for him, and that we are going to have to say goodbye. And I don't know what the right way to leave the game is, whether it's like a Pete Sampras, you leave winning a major and just never come back, whether it's a Roger Federer who just realizes, hey, I can't do this anymore, and so I'm going to have to tap out, or whether it's Nadal who's trying to push and maybe have one last, incredible moment. But this of all of them is, I feel, going to be maybe the hardest to watch as he goes through these tournaments, as a fan of the sport. And someone who has a lot of respect for what this guy's accomplished and added to the overall fabric of tennis as well.
Yeah, it's going to be I think quite difficult seeing slowly these legends of the game slowly say goodbye. And if you haven't had a chance, I had a feature interview last week with Vasek Pospisil for the podcast, and I had to ask him, like, it must feel pretty surreal as a professional player playing your entire career through the Big Three era, and we're seeing it come to an end. And obviously, we knew it had to happen at some point, but Roger, as we know, is gone. Rafa soon to go. Andy Murray soon to go, if we want to call it a big four, which we absolutely had for a stretch of time. And I mean, sounds like Novak will be the final one standing. And we don't know how long he's going to stick around. We really don't know. Obviously, he looked at the peak of his powers last season, and we'll see how he looks in Rome. But there's more tennis in Madrid to talk about on the women's side as well. And I
Yeah,
thought,
and just sorry, just before
yeah,
we
go
get into
ahead.
that with Rafa, I'm just like so many questions. Like, what's the rest of his year going to look like? Are we going to get to see him have another match?
Olympics.
A final match against Djokovic. I'd love to see them play one more time. Will he have a big run in a tournament? Does he have one big run left in him? Are we going to see him play the grass court swing? Or because of the fact that he's gearing up for the Olympics, does he just stick with clay and not touch the grass? I mean, it'd be kind of nice to see him step back on the lawns of the All England Club, where he had
Yep.
so many fantastic, incredible runs there. I just have all these questions, and it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for him the rest of 2024.
I wonder if he plays Canada too. He's won it 5 times. It's the best hard court event. So it would be incredible if he made the trip to Montreal, but we'll see. Women's side, we were treated to an incredible final here, and very much the opposite of the men's draw, which was carnage. And we saw kind of all the top players fall and an unlikely final. Here we get 1v2, Iga Swiatek against Aryna Sabalenka. And I thought this was one of the women's matches of the year, if not the best. And Iga coming through 7-5, 4-6, 7-6 in 3 hours, 11 minutes. Such incredible mental fortitude from Iga, and this one saved 3 match points. So locked in, incredible result, and she's up to 20 career WTA titles, youngest player since Caroline Wozniacki to reach 20 titles at the age of 22. She'll turn 23 this year, but she and Rybakina now both this season have 3 titles and 30 wins. Great response from Aryna Sabalenka, who had been a bit off her game, understandably, post Australian Open, but she played incredible. Iga still reigns supreme, even if it was only by a couple points, and still very much proving herself as the player to beat on clay.
I'm absolutely loving this lead up on the women's side to Roland Garros, because it's going to be like it's shaping up to be absolute fireworks. And what you're getting from those top three players in the world is exactly what you would hope for. They're consistently going deep in these tournaments. They're facing each other a number of times. The matches are generally going, really, really deep, like this one did.
Yep.
And I mean, look, in Stuttgart, we got Rybakina, who defeated Swiatek in the semis along the way to her title. Madrid, we got Swiatek squeaked by Sabalenka, who had beaten Rybakina in the semifinals. We got Rome coming up next. I mean, it's just top level stuff, and Roland Garros should be absolutely terrific. And what I love about the women's tour right now is you've got these three, four players, if you want to include Coco Gauff there too, who are just performing at their best when they need to be. But
Yep.
then behind them, you've also got so much depth on the WTA tour. Like, it's not like there's this sharp drop off. Everybody else is really strong as well. So to me, it's just you're getting the best of both worlds with the women's game right now in terms of big stars, but also a real solid tour overall.
Yeah, I was having trouble almost phrasing it in our notes here because I wanted to call the women's draw or the women's tour right now top heavy. But I don't want to make it sound like it's not sort of very strong beneath the top five. And you kind of illustrated that correctly. Like it is very top heavy with those top three, particularly right now. We haven't seen quite as much from Coco this season, but she's still been good. And then trickle down, you still have so many fantastic players who can regularly make deep runs at events. But, Iga is standing out. And it's interesting, Sabalenka, took that number one ranking from her for a period of time last year, I think about 8 weeks. And now we're seeing like a sizable gap because, of course, Sabalenka had to defend her 2,000 points, even still just winning the Australian Open. But Iga is starting to kind of run away with this ranking. She's up to 10,910 points now at world number one. Aryna Sabalenka is just below 7,500. So that's pretty sizable and significant. And you get a sense of just how good she's been over 52 weeks.
And yet, look at the results, though, when they play each other. I mean, so close. Like,
Yeah, no,
no
she's
offense,
right
right? But like,
there.
nobody cares about those ranking points when they're in the finals and they're trading match points and whatnot,
True.
right? Like, it's
Yeah.
so close there. And I think what we've seen from Rybakina too this clay court season has been phenomenal. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
she just looks like she's out on a mission too. So I don't know. I mean, sure, we're going to give Swiatek the slight nod heading into Roland Garros based on the fact she's won it several times before. But those other two are showing that they are right there with her, and I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, and Rybakina, I should say, like she was in the semifinals and lost 7-6 in the third to Sabalenka. So, yeah, as you said, all incredibly close matches. Something pretty cool I noticed on Instagram, you did too. A couple of recent guests of ours teaming up and being trained by one of our regular guests and coach Rob Steckley, working with Canadian Marina Sakusic and Lucy Safarova, who you also recently interviewed for the podcast, who's expressed her interest in making a doubles return. I have to say, her game still looks very, very good. And of course, much more senior than Sakusic, who's still a teenager, but a tremendous ball striker. It's sort of like the student and the teacher working with, I guess, the ultimate teacher in Rob.
And that is like a Match Point Canada trifecta right there. My
I
goodness, if we
know.
ever had three people training together who've been like recent guests on the
Yeah.
podcast that somehow all link together. And yeah, what a cool dynamic. Because as you mentioned, like Safarova, the veteran, what a great person to learn from for young Marina Stakusic. And Rob Steckley just sort of providing the guidance and also the lightheartedness that you would want to make the training fun over there. So I think it's pretty cool for Marina. I am excited to see what she's able to do as this year progresses as well. And yeah, it was kind of fun to see that. And speaking of things we've seen on Instagram, Canadian Jeannie Bouchard looks like she is about to make her long-awaited return to tennis after a bit of a foray into pickleball over the last few months. We haven't seen her play a WTA event since September, and she's set to play the 75K at Zephyr Hills in Florida this coming week. Currently ranked 466th on the women's tour. I got to be honest, I was wondering when we were going to see her come back, if ever, but this to me shows a willingness to see how she could still compete with a tennis racket in her hand instead of that pickleball racket.
Yeah, I'd be curious what her goals and aspirations are at this stage. Is it just something for fun? Like, I still enjoy competing and playing tennis, and let me pop into tournaments from time to time as she sort of floated around playing pickleball as well? Or is this sort of a commitment to let me give it a shot here in 2024 and have this be the first of multiple events where maybe she's, playing the ITF circuit, 75Ks, 100Ks, and seeing how it goes? And look, the past couple of years when she has shown up and played, she's flashed signs and potential. Nothing incredible, but I think when you watch her play, to me, she looks more like a top 150, I would say, than certainly not like a 466. Obviously, she hasn't played, so that's reflective in the ranking. But if she still has goals and wants to continue her tennis, there's no reason she can't compete in these types of events and win some matches.
And these are probably the right type of events to come back and start playing. Like,
Oh,
don't
yeah.
go for the wild cards to bigger events like 250s or 500s. Like, do this, and hopefully get a few wins under your belt and prove to yourself that you can still do it. I mean, she turned 30 just recently. There's still a lot left in the tank, I think, for Jeannie, given the fact that she's also been off. So I'm excited to see what she can do. Look, she made an appearance on the Billie Jean King Cup team and was, in there to provide some depth as well. And I thought that was great, given all she's, sort of contributed to Canadian tennis over her career, that she was a part of that championship winning squad. And I'd love to see her give it a legit sort of go here before she does decide to hang up her racket. And hey, look, if Venus Williams can still pick tournaments here and there at the age of 43, I think Jeannie's still got some years left where she can definitely do the same, if not more, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. We have many episodes left in this season. I think we have many years to come with the podcast. That's my hope, at least on Matchpoint Canada. This episode was a good one. Make sure to listen. Bianca Andreescu, our special guest, and we're so excited for her comeback. Guys, you've been listening to Matchpoint Canada. We will talk to you next time.